What are we starting 2021 with?
We review. The first Wii review of 2021.
Amazing. What a great year. We've left 2020 in the past, and it just feels so good to be out of it, doesn't it?
I've got a good feeling about this year.
Got a good feeling about this year. Don't you, Luke?
I had a good feeling about 2020, man.
That is true. Let's touch wood.
So, we've got a review that says, it's 5 stars, by the way. It says, I love this podcast so much, with a little smiley face. Currently listening to the Game Theory episode. Ooh, that's a good one from last year. Mm. In my math class, because it's more interesting and I'm procrastinating. Worth it, though.
Mm. Mm.
Please don't listen to Sci Guys instead of listening to your teachers. Please don't.
Unless they are bad at their jobs.
In a hierarchy, listen to teachers first and then us, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, either that or don't let your teachers know that you're listening to us.
Ooh, we're side piece.
Little secret.
Start the show.
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutfer.
Hi.
Well, hello there.
This week, we're talking about the dangers of a new year.
Oh, don't do this. The year's just bloody started.
Don't worry, it's not this year. It's not this year. We're talking about Y2K, the millennium bug. 21 years on. Yeah. Oh. Do you guys remember this?
I mean, not really, no.
No. Luke, I'll be honest. You might, maybe?
I don't remember. I remember the year 2000, vaguely. Ew. But I do know what you're about to talk about. I do know what Y2K is, but I don't remember Y2K being a thing when I also remember year 2000.
Well, you wouldn't, because it was a thing for the 90s. So I know about Y2K, by the way, as one may assume, as I know everything, from a Simpsons episode. There was a very good Simpsons Treehouse of Horror sketch from it. Mm. So I thought I'd do an episode on that because it's all I can think about during New Year. But no, Y2K, the millennium bug, it was this massive fear that people had about the turn of the millennium. When it went from 1999 to January 1st, 2000, the world was going to end.
Mm. I've heard about this from my parents because I was a bit too young to remember.
Yeah, I mean...
But apparently there was some theories going around.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, and obviously we're here now, the world didn't end. So it was all a big hoax, wasn't it?
Unless the world did end and we collapsed into a different timeline.
Okay, unless that happened, but...
Hang on. The theory was not that the world was going to end.
Hold on. I've heard that. To an extent, it was. But I'll get
what?
Into... It was, yeah. To an extent.
The world, as in the Earth would cease to exist.
No, the world ending doesn't mean... We're very... Luke, you know that humans are very self-centered. If we have a minor inconvenience, the world is ended.
If humans end, the world is gone.
So I'll tell you what people were actually scared about. So people were worried about computers bugging out at the turn of the millennium. Remember, computers were fairly new. Personal computers were, really picking up sort of, were really, not new, but quite prevalent in the 90s. It was becoming quite the thing. This was before, to all the youngins listening, I say, being a child in the 90s. this was before we all carried high-powered computers in our pockets. This was a time when...
What did we do before then?
I don't know.
Talk to each other?
This is a time when you had one computer in your house, probably. You know?
Yeah.
And it sat in its own room.
The family computer. The dial-up made a loud noise.
Yeah, all of those things that we definitely remember.
Can you get off the phone? I need to use the internet.
So, yeah, no, this was back in the 90s, before... the turn of the millennium, before 2000. So the idea was that as soon as it hit January 1st, 2000, that computers would crash and not be able to deal with the year 2000. And you often hear people say, and in my research, I heard this specific line said so many times, that planes would fall from the sky or nuclear reactors would melt down. And there were doomsday preppers, as there always are, people stocking up on food, buying guns. Guess which country that was in? I wonder which one. Yeah, anything that ran on or was operated by a computer was at risk. Specifically, if it had computer code, you were under threat from this, or at least so people thought.
Yeah.
As we all know, as we're all fully aware, nothing major happened on January 1st, 2000. The world kept turning, and we didn't have to deal with every computer system on the planet crashing. So, does that mean that it was all overblown nonsense?
No,
apparently not.
No, it actually wasn't. There was nothing. The people thought that...
Otherwise, the episode would end.
Yeah, that's it. The end of the episode now. no, people thought that actually this was all going to like sort of end the world. And when nothing happened, people then quite quickly turned into thinking, oh, it was all just a big hoax. You know, remember 2012 with the Mayan calendar?
Oh, good film.
Good Lord, no. it was treated like that. You know, we're like, oh, the world's going to end because the Mayan calendar ends. And then it didn't happen, and people were like, oh, it was all big hoax. People thought the same thing with the Millennium Bug. But that's not exactly the case. The reason that nothing happened, there was something to worry about. There weren't many things to worry about. But the reason nothing happened is because a lot of people put in a lot of work behind the scenes. In fact, they did such a good job that we don't need to look. We look back and we think that it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah. This is like the thing that happened last year that we don't mention. It's like, you know, we get that thing that we put in our arm that gives us immunity from the thing that we don't mention, and then everything goes back to normal. What did you say?
The super soldier serum, yes, from Captain America. This is what you're talking about, right?
I don't know anything about Marvel. We get that thing in our arm that we don't mention that fixes the thing that we don't mention that happened last year, and then everything goes back to normal, and suddenly everyone goes, ah, it probably didn't even exist then. It was just made up. It's like, yes, because people fixed it.
It's like the face coverings that we had to wear for the thing. As soon as people started to wear those and the thing went down, mm-hmm. people were like, oh, it was nothing to worry about from the start.
Oh, they're just trying to put muzzles on us.
I wish. You're the people that we want to muzzle. No. No, so yeah, a lot of people put in a lot of work. And so we don't need to worry about it. And to understand what happened and how we fixed it, you first need to understand how computers were storing dates at the time.
Mm.
Dates as in date and time, not dates as in swiping through Tinder.
Or the Again. Fruit.
Mm. Or the fruit.
This
or
is where any... I store my little dates. Well, one per computer.
I've seen some people store their dates in the fridge, and I'll tell you this, you should not. Don't need to store your dates in the fridge. Just simply put your dates in the cupboards. They're fine in the cupboards.
I thought they were a fridge food.
No, dates are very easily a cupboard food. Don't be taken in by big fridge.
No.
I'm glad we're starting the year as we mean to go on, which is absolute inanity. So, how did computers store time, Luke?
They stored them as by calculating the number of seconds it had been since January 1st, 1970.
Well, no.
Well, guys, I tried. I'm sorry,
but don't worry. You're not wrong. You're not wrong there. You're not wrong there. It will be relevant later on. We'll get to it in a bit.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hold that thought. And, you know, keep on counting how many seconds it's been since January 1st, 1970.
I'm sorry, guys. I just try to exist in a world in which Unix is the only base operating system
that's
we use.
Absolute
and
lie.
Microsoft does not exist.
That's an absolute lie, because the only system that Luke uses is Luke. He counts the number of seconds since Luke was born. That's how he calculates time. I promise you that. Look, 27 AL, we're not letting that joke die. So...
Hey, it's 28 AL now.
It's 27 AL.
It's 28 AL.
We've just finished 26 AL, so I think it's 27 AL. Think about how old you are.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm sitting here with the SciGuys calendar. and it says 28 AL, but that's next year.
Yes, it says this year.
Right, I wrote it. I'm glad I got it right, because I started worrying that I'd actually printed loads of calendars with the wrong numbers on. That was a very scary time. Okay, listen, everything's fine.
The helpful thing is, with you, the number system is named after you. So you just have to think about how old you are, and that's the year. Or how old you're going to be on your birthday that year.
Look, okay, this is what happens. This is what happens when you have an error in calculating the number of seconds since the 6th of April, 1994. You get the Y27 bug.
Listen, it's people like you that were the reason that people were scared that the world was going to end in 2000. Because we can't bloody keep
track
of the
dates. People like me, people who believe the universe began at their birth.
Yes.
Oh, those pesky solipsists.
Computers that thought the world began in 1970.
So computers in sort of the 1960s to 80s, they started to have complicated computer programs. I'm just moving on from what we were speaking about earlier. I'm not, no segue.
Not even going to pay attention to it.
Smash cut into it. So yeah, complicated computer programs started being written during the 1960s through like the sort of 1980s, more complicated than they were before. And, you know, up until the 90s, a lot of programs, and I say up until the 90s, even in the 90s, because people are just the worst, a lot of programs, like quite specifically ones written earlier, abbreviated four-digit years into two digits. So instead of saying 1965, mm-hmm. they wouldn't store 1965, they would just store 65. Mm. And you might start to see where the problem is here. So
I see.
They did this to save memory space because computer memory was expensive. Yeah, so they took dates and made them six characters instead of the full sort of, well, currently for us would be full eight calendars, but that only do us to the year 9999. Then we've got the year 10,000 bug. No, 10,000? 9,000? Yeah, the year 10,000 bug. Yeah, so they were using six characters to represent dates instead of eight, mm-hmm. Chopping off the 19 from the year date, from the year. So if we, for example, say, you know, it would be 06, well, would it be? Yeah, 06, 04, 94, mm-hmm. if we wanted to represent
the beginning of time.
Yes, the beginning of time. For all those listening, that's Luke's birthday. If you wanted to represent if we wanted to represent the 6th of April 1994, we'd say 06 04 94.
That's it,
because obviously saving up that space that those two digits took up, the 19 was beneficial. So a lot of the code that those programmers wrote would either just shove 19, like 19, onto any year. So like if you had 08, they'd shove in 19 on the start of it. So it was 1908. And they would read it as 1908. Right. Either that, or it just would like not even, it would just like read 08 as like, okay, so obviously it's 1908. They wouldn't even add anything onto it. They would just assume that all sort of dates are that. Yeah. You know, you've only got set sort of, a set period of dates that you can have. It doesn't put the 19 on it. It just assumes. Reads it as it is. Yeah. Yeah. So it what I mean by that is it doesn't make an assumption about the century. So by default, it is basically 19. So it could, those systems, those programs could really only exist in the sort of 20th century. So, and as I said, computer memory was really expensive at the time. So apparently, early core memory, it was $1 per bit.
Oh
yeah,
a bit is nothing.
Luke, how many bits are in a wait, is it bits in a gigabyte?
How many bits are in a gigabyte?
Million, isn't it?
So there's 8 bits in a byte, and then you just have to scale it up. So it depends what you mean, because sometimes people say gigabytes is the exact, like the thousandths, and then sometimes it will be like the multiple of 8.
That's why I asked you, because I know that it's, I knew that it was confusing, and I didn't want to have to figure it out. Basically, what I'm saying here is that $1 per bit is expensive.
Yeah.
It's a lot. So the IBM 1401, which was a really sort of popular computer for sort of public to get, sort of commercial computer, that had about 2 kilobytes of memory it would come with,
right.
Which is not very much.
No, it's
all.
Not.
That's what, 8,000?
But expensive, apparently.
16,000 bytes. Yeah. And those computers were really expensive. And if you look at sort of prices at the time, you can see them being as low as $10 per kilobyte, up to $100 per kilobyte for memory space. So what we're saying here is that saving even the littlest bits is going to save you money. Because if one byte is $1, you're saving $2 if you save 2 bytes, you know? One bit is $1, you're saving $2 if you save 2 bits. And that'll scale up if you're using dates a lot. So it made sense for them to try and limit the amount of data they were using to store dates as possible. So that's how you can kind of maybe start to see how the problem was going to come about. But what was it, a real problem? And what would have actually happened had no one done anything? Had we gone to the year 2000, what would have actually happened? I'm going to tell you something about overflow. Do you guys know about overflow?
In memory?
Yeah.
Only very little.
Well, I'm only going to go over the most basic sort of explanation of it. Let's put it this way: if there's sort of limited space, If you go past the highest value, you'll wrap back round to the lowest and vice versa. Basically, you can see this in old 8-bit and 16-bit video game cheats. Mm. Before I get into it, let me just explain binary notation really quickly. We usually use base 10 because we've got, I think, because we've got 10 fingers, if you think about it. If you think about it this way, there are 10 characters that we have to represent numbers. Right. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yes.
Those 10 characters. And that means that once we count up to 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, we don't have a character to represent this number 10. We don't have a character to represent it. So what do? We just put together two of the characters that we've already got. We put together 1 and 0. So we actually make a column that is a column for 10s. And we say that we've got 1 10 in that column and 0 1s in the column to the right. Yeah? So that's, I mean, you're already aware of how to count, I'm sure.
Yeah,
but
yes.
You're not necessarily quite sort of explicitly aware of how our number system works. Because it obviously comes quite intuitively, but that is how the system works. And once we get up to 19, once we've got that, we can get up to 99. That's the highest number that you can get with those two columns. But once we get to 99, we want to go higher than that. We add a third column that is for hundreds.
And the crucial thing here is that your first two columns then become 00.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that third column, you just have 00.
Yeah. So, and there's also different number systems. So basically the way that you look at this, each column increases by a factor of 10. Mm-hmm. Now we've got the first column as ones, and we've got the second column as tens, then hundreds, then thousands, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So each, if you add a new column, that increases by a factor of 10 because we've got sort of 10 characters essentially. Now, there are different number systems. There's hexadecimal, which has 16 characters. It goes from 0 to, I think, E or something. So you go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, A, B, C, D, E, going on until you've got 16 characters.
Right.
Now, you can represent numbers up to 15 before you start needing a new column. And then we've also got binary, where you have two characters, 0 and 1.
Yes.
So once you've gone, once you've got 1 in one column, you want to go over 1, you need to have a new column. Mm-hmm. So the way that works is that with binary, the sort of first column means 1. The column to the left of that is 2. Mm-hmm. So if there's a one in the sort of second column, that means two. That represents 2. If there's a 1 in the third column, that represents 4.
So it keeps doubling.
Yeah, it keeps doubling each time.
So the next one is 8 and then 16.
Yes, exactly. Like I said, each column increases by a factor of 2 in the same way that each column of 10s increases by a factor of 10. From left to right, you've got columns going 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and then so on. So the number 1 looks exactly the same in binary as it does in, base 10 in our sort of standard number system. But 2 looks like 1, 0. It looks like 10. Yeah?
Yes.
3 would be 1, 1, 4 is 100, 25 would be 1101, and 100 would be 110010. Okay?
Okay.
Now 8-bit refers to the number of columns you can have, the maximum number of digit, the maximum number of digits. So you've got 8 columns, which means you could go up to lots. So in an 8-bit CPU, the highest number of values that can be used in one machine instruction is 255, because that's 2 to the power of 8 minus 1. Bear in mind that sort of 0 would be a value. So it goes from 0. You've got 266 values. So 0 is one of those. That means you can go up to 255. But when you go over 255, you can't go over 255. You don't have any space to go over 255. So it says it wraps back around. It just goes back to 0.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, 255. What's 255 plus 1? We don't have
0.
We don't have
0.
One in the next column. The
next column doesn't exist.
Yeah, the next column doesn't exist. So it adds it. The next column doesn't exist. So it just goes to 0. And then you want to add 1 to it again.
Right.
It's just, what's 0 plus 1? Oh, it's 1. So that's how that works. When you take that away, it's like, I don't know. And it goes back to being the maximum value. So this is used in computer cheats in that with some Pokemon games, for example, one can perform a cheat which makes things wrap around. So you can take a Pokemon that's got a very low stat, and you can some use a cheat to take away all of its sort of stats, which then will make it have the absolute highest stats, because once you go from zero, you wrap back around to the top 255 sort of thing. So that means, like, if you, it may be sort of difficult to understand, but overflow, it's fairly simple. If you've got sort of limited space, which all computer systems do, once you reach the maximum, it can't go higher than the maximum, so it has to wrap back round and it goes to the minimum again and starts counting up from there.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, and if it's zero,
that makes sense.
Yeah, you take one away from zero, you get the highest value.
Yeah.
And that's an issue. So if we look at this, this is actually somewhat relevant to what Luke was saying before. I just want to explain iPhones bricking when you set the date to January 1st, 1970. So that's something that used to happen with iPhones. If you set the date to January 1st, 1970, you could stop your iPhone from working. It would just crash. Because it couldn't function. Now, they basically used a system that counts dates from January 1st, 1970, the sort of Unix time, as Luke was saying, and I'll explain why that is later. But there was an issue with when you set your date to January 1st, 1970, because, okay, Apple doesn't necessarily talk openly about sort of bugs like this, but it's kind of essentially believed that your phone, if you set your phone to the January 1st, 1970, that for Unix time, that is the start of time.
Right.
Essentially.
So how we treat Luke and AL.
Yeah, it's how we treat Luke and AL. But so
like, computer time.
Yeah, so for Unix time, that's the start of time, essentially. So if you've set it to January 1st, 1970, and your phone every now and then will be like, will try and pull up dates from the past a little bit, like, oh, when was the last sort of message sent, or when was this last action performed? When was the last update? It will just do little checks like that. This is sort of the theory of how these iPhones sort of iPhones crashing would happen. So if your phone is at the start of time and it says, oh, when was the last update? And it looks and it says, oh, the last update was 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, 3 days before the start of time, because we know about overflow, three days before the start of time, it wraps back round to being so incredibly far in the future that the iPhone can't handle it and it breaks. That's basically the theory of what happened, because it would give a date so far in the future that the iPhone just went, crash.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Good night.
Like, and because if you think about it, bear in mind that the way that these sort of dates are stored, again, in binary notation, it goes up by like sort of two times each. It goes up by a factor of two each time. Let's say you've got 8-bit, you've got 8 columns, right? Yeah. 32-bit, you've got 32 columns.
Right.
64-bit, you've got 64 columns. So you've got sort of 2 times 2 times 2 times 64 times, which is a very big number, which is so incredibly far in the future that we would be dead. The planet could be dead. It's so far in the future, iPhones would probably not exist then. And so it would crash. And that's just a little sort of explanation of like sort of how an issue with overflow can affect technology. Like, it would just brick iPhones. So you guys got a decent understanding of how what I'm talking about when it comes
it's
to
the
overflow.
First time I've learned it properly, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does. And it's so interesting because, I mean, what was it? I think I was watching a video that explained it was some game, I think Civilization or something, where Gandhi had an aggression score of like zero, of like one. But like, if you play through the game, there are things that reduce your aggression score. So Gandhi's aggression score would be reduced from one, like down to zero and then beyond that. But because it would go back to the top. So Gandhi would be like starting wars in this game because his aggression score would be like wrap back around to be like the highest it could possibly ever be. So it's like little things like this, like that obviously there are ways around this. I'm not going to get into it because I'm not a computer programmer, but
yeah.
Obviously, like, this is something that programmers are aware of and they need to be like, and if they sort of miss it, you can have little mistakes like that that can range from Gandhi starting wars to iPhones just like crashing.
Breaking.
Yeah.
Time traveling.
Yeah, yeah. Like genuinely trying to time travel. So what would
I just want to share this little tidbit. In answer to what Corey was talking about the iPhone, calculating so far in the future, I've just found apparently if assuming that the iPhones were on 64-bit at the time when this 2007 bug was happening, the Unix time would have ended in the year 292,277,026,596. A lovely December 4th day.
So we might be gone.
I would think that, well, we'll either be gone or on another planet, or we might also be computers by that point.
Or Disney.
Imagine if we
Apple
transfer ourselves into computers and then we get a Y2K bug. Oh no.
See, this is one of the things where I'm like, I don't know if I want to upload my mind into a computer unless I've got my own backup, because like I don't trust it. Like, there is definitely a programmer that's like, ah, that'll do. You know, like, it's 5 o'clock and that'll do. I'll sort it later. You know, if it's and honestly, this is the issue with Y2K. So many people were like, oh, we'll fix it later. Like, yeah, it'll be a problem. It's not, look, if this is gonna be a problem 20 years in the future, I'm not gonna be working. So what would this have done in terms of Y2K? So computers in the 90s were everywhere. I mean, think about now and how ingrained computers are in our society. Mm. I mean, you need to remember that, oh my God, that was 30 years ago. I keep on remembering that the 90s wasn't, every now and then I'm like, oh, the 90s was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's like 10 years
and then
ago.
Then I'm like, oh wait. Then I finally got into my head in the late 2010s. Oh yeah, the 90s was 20 years ago.
20.
And now I'm like, oh no.
Well,
no,
the 90s was still 21 years ago. Or yeah, 22 now.
Yeah.
It wasn't 30 years ago. It was still happening
30 years
on
ago,
December 31st, 1999.
Yeah, the 90s started 30 years ago. Over 30 years ago is my point.
Yeah, but the 90s, you said the 90s were 30 years ago.
Sorry, the 90s started.
They were, but they were also 22 years ago.
Yeah, but my point is that in my head, right, I'm sitting here thinking like, yes, the 90s, that period 10 to 20 years ago. And actually it's like, yes, the 90s, that period sort of 20 to 30 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, look, the 90s was a time when computers were really like everywhere. Mm. I mean, not quite as everywhere as they are today, but, you know, almost near enough. Personal computers becoming a thing, by which PCs, you know, I mean, now we've all got, like, we've pretty much all got one. In fact, if you're watching this, you probably have some kind of computer.
Probably watching us on a phone.
Unless you're watching a potato, in which case,
yeah, true, yeah.
You know, sorry about that. No, but most people in sort of countries like the UK and US have got computers. And we had sort of Apple's first iMac coming out, Microsoft Windows 95, video games even, like Wolfenstein 3D and Tomb Raider. So the computers were everywhere. In fact, some of the things that could have happened, UK's anti-aircraft missile system, Rapier, had a Y2K fault that would have prevented it from firing, which, okay, no missiles for us to fire. It's fine. But banks... if they were to calculate interest daily, would have had massive issues. Instead of calculating the interest for a day, they would have calculated the interest for minus 100 years.
Or until the end of time.
No. It would have been minus, for the, in this case, it would have been minus 100 years. Because it would have wrapped back round. Mm-hmm. Because in 2001, it would have wrapped back round to being, the year 2000, it would have wrapped back round to being the year 1900.
Imagine if you had no checks on that and the bank accidentally transferred you 100 years worth of interest.
It's negative 100 years worth of interest. So they would be
taking money. They'd be taking it to you, I mean. So they would transfer it to you. So it's negative interest.
Well, no, as in like, I mean, this is like not just interest on, like credit, but also interest on like, interest in your accounts as well. Yeah. You know? So if you've got accounts that accumulate interest, there'd be issues there as well. Power plants, if they have daily or hourly checks that depend on days, power plants would have not been necessarily been checked properly. Mm. Transportation, trains, buses, all of these things which depend on the correct time would not have been working, because it would have, we've got a train scheduled for the year 2000 January 1st at 6 a.m. but unfortunately that's in 100 years, so the train will not be leaving. Like, those are the kind of like all those little issues, right? It seems little, right? These little things. But imagine all of that: power plants melting down, banks having money going to and from accounts that they shouldn't be going to, safety checks not being performed on nuclear safety nuclear power facilities, transportation not being able to go on time, or issues with that, all of these different things, all of these situations throughout everywhere that has a computer, being affected. The stock market, if it was affected, that would have could have wrecked that. Anything that had a computer was at risk of having anything that was date dependent just potentially affected. And yeah, all of these little, all of these things sound little and funny on their own, but all together, it could have been a very big problem having to deal with all of it at once. Yeah. You know, so what was done to fix it? The first person to that I was aware of to the sort of publicly spoke about this was someone called Bob Bamer, who noticed it in 1958, working on genealogical sort of software. So, by which I mean genealogical software being like sort of family history, and I assume he would have noticed it when they tried to show someone that was born probably either before 1900 or something like that, and it said they were born, you know. Let's say that you wanted to say they were, let's say this was the 50s, right? And you wanted to say, oh yes, they were born in 1888. It would actually say, oh, they were born in 1988, which is 30 years from now.
In the future. Like, yeah, like in the future. Traveler.
So instead of this person being, what, in the 50s being like 60 years old or like 70 years old, they'd actually be negative 30 years old. So I assume that's how he found it. So he then tried to make people aware of it, like the governments and programmers. He was like, this is a problem that we need to fix it because it's going to be a big issue. And yeah, people, as far as I'm aware, because he brought this up in the late 50s, people were generally just like, I don't need to do it now. Like, this is the 50s. This is a problem for the 90s, which is 40 years away.
We're in the middle of the century. And we have like, nothing to worry
it's
about.
It's like, I don't plan on living that long. So yeah. I'm not going to spend all my time working on this. But then, the UN International, so we're talking about what was done to fix it. Like the UN International Y2K Coordination Center, they estimated that the cost of all the work done to be between $300 billion to $500 billion. Yeah, and this probably would have been, I think, bear in mind, I think this might have been, this estimate might have come in the sort of noughties. So that was about 20 years ago. So think of inflation. It's probably considerably more than that in current money. By 1995, though, the New York Stock Exchange had completed a 7-year project to correct all of its systems. That cost them $30 million. Now, the reason that the New York Stock Exchange did this, because the financial sector was like hot on this, because they started using computers pretty quickly, and obviously they did not want any issues. Like, that could ruin them, because the stock market isn't real, and as soon as people realize that, it doesn't have its power anymore.
It all goes to shit.
It's just like Pennywise from It. You know, yeah. All you need to do is laugh at the stock exchange, and then it turns into a little baby, and you can kick it to death.
Can't hurt you because it's not real.
It can hurt you, but it's not real.
Yeah, just like Pennywise.
It's got a face up to it.
Yeah, and then kick it to death. Exactly.
Yeah, and then you've beaten the stock market.
Yeah. So obviously, gonna have like people that are like, actually, I'm an economist, and the stock market's
probably not real.
It's not real. It's not real. It's made up.
I'm studying economics, and I'm a few months in. I can say to you that the stock market is not real.
What I love about, so there's two things that happen to people. Two things that happen to people that study economics, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the overwhelming majority that are like, economics is it's so important, and blah blah blah. And then you've got people that are radicalized, like our friend Luke.
Am I radicalized?
Well, you're on
probably
the way.
Slightly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as you look into the face of the beast, you're like, oh, we do think. Anyway, the New York Stock Exchange, yeah, they were one of the sort of leaders in this, because obviously the stock market depends on belief, much like fairies do.
I do believe in fairies. I do. Figuring out the stock market is like figuring out how Harry Potter magic works, because there's rules to it, even though it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and some people really want it to exist and are really annoying about it, but, you know. And I assume the inventor was probably transphobic as well.
There's no such thing as fairies.
So, as I said, the New York Stock Exchange, they really got their stuff together by 1995. But the UK, we did a survey in 1995 and found that only 15% of senior managers were aware of the problem. So while the New York Stock Exchange got their stuff done, they were far ahead of anywhere else, which is understandable because, again, depend on belief. Now, yeah, we needed to get things done. I think the UK government spent had a £17 million budget for a specific sort of task force.
Yeah.
So there was Action 2000. They had a £17 million government budget. There was Task Force 2000, which had an awareness campaign. And then, you know, auditors wouldn't sign off on audits until companies had proven that they were able to sort of deal with this. Because if they had major issues, companies could just not survive beyond the year 2000. Like, if your data stops working after the year 2000, like the way that you access your data, the way you work with it is heavily compromised, or there are significant delays that cause you a massive loss of profits, companies could go under in the year 2000, just by virtue of it turning from 1999 to 2000. So it was a fairly big thing. Bill Clinton, the president at the time, he had a council on Y2K, and that was to sort of make sure that there was sort of concerted efforts in the United States to sort this out. and yeah, the United States apparently spent about $100 billion. Those are the general estimates. $100 billion that it spent. $8.5 billion of that was from the federal government to deal with the Millennium Bug problem. But yeah, the thing is that we also don't know how it was spent or what it went to, or if it was even well spent, or whatnot. But we know that a lot of money was spent to solve this problem. Mm. And clearly it worked fairly well. Now, in terms of how to fix it, there are two main options when it comes to fixing it. So you guys got any idea? What could you do to fix the Millennium Bug?
My best guess would be develop some bit of code that runs on everything.
Well, yeah, okay. That's, look, a software update.
That's what, yeah, software update.
Guys, I'm feeling ill. What should I do about it? What do you think, like, what do you think is the best way to deal with this illness? I'll just go to the doctor. Well, yes, but like, maybe take some medicine. Yeah.
Well, okay, that is true. So allow your time to be stored in 4 digits via a software update.
You know exactly what
you're doing. You know
exactly what you're doing, man. Yeah, so software update is the...
No way.
If you say software update, it's just the fact that the options are then software update or nothing. Like, hardware update?
No, we,
like,
we didn't update anything. We just threw out all the old computers and replaced them.
It's a hardware update.
Well, that's the other option, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but the software would still need to be updated because the software was the issue as well.
But not on that computer.
I don't think we have time to explain how software works, but
the new hardware comes with new software. Yeah, there's no update.
You don't have to update it. It just comes with the new software.
So, but what about all the data that's in your old software?
Throw it in the bin.
Software update.
Right. Oh, I guess all of this, ooh, this massive all database we've got on all of our customers. Cleared. Well, that's going in the bin.
Dunk.
Okay, so Corey, what are the two options for how you can fix this then?
Software update.
More specific.
Hardware. So you could recode the software. So
and how would you get that new software onto the hardware?
You know how you would do it, Luke? You would take a hammer, and why don't you try this at home? You take a hammer and just bash it into your own head. Just give it a go. Give it a go, man. Do it.
That's a hardware update, Corey.
That's not that hard. It's...
A hammer's pretty hard.
Well, yeah, but your skull's not.
It's pretty hard.
Got a soft skull, my friend. So... what were the two main options to fix it? So you could recode the software so that it understands that those years 00, 01, 02 actually mean 2000, 2001, and so on. Or you could like sort of really fix the problem. You sort of really fix the problem by using 4-digit placeholders for years and then recoding all of the software to deal with those 4-digit dates. That's the thing, because like, and bear in mind that, as I've said already, that only gets us up to the year 9,999, 4 digits. So, you know, we're just...
And we're coming up on that pretty quick.
Yeah. We're rushing towards it, full steam ahead. Yeah. I mean, once we cure aging, That's going to be a real problem.
We need to think that far ahead.
Yeah, the 10,000 bug. Yeah. So, yeah, and the thing is that this is the sort of brute force perfect fix. However, you guys might... What is potentially an issue with recoding all of the software and making sure that all of the dates recorded are... the correct, the sort of four-digit dates.
It can't read old dates.
But you recode it so that the old dates are...
So you have to update all your historical data.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is that an issue, maybe? Why is that?
Oh, because it might bring past dates into the future when they're meant to be in the past.
Oh, no. It's literally just because of the sheer volume of data that one needs to go through.
Because bear in mind, some of it will be stored on data formats that are slow or inaccessible. Mm. And you make old data potentially unreadable.
Yeah. And if you think about it, there are the numbers of lines of code that there are. Because I mean, bear in mind, I don't know if anyone listening at home really knows what coding looks like, but it a lot of it is just sort of basically, it's kind of just a list of it's just a long list of instructions that computers can understand.
Yeah,
essentially, it's just do this, then do that. If this, that. Very machine simplified, code. But that's essentially what computer code is: just a list of what to do at different eventualities, Going into this code, I mean, I've got here, the value I've got here is that an insurance company could have 20 or 30 million lines of code that perform its insurance calculations. And inside that, there could be 100,000 or 200, these are just ballparks, by the way, 100,000 or 200,000 date calculations. And obviously, you may have to manually go in and find all of those and edit those, depending on how it was programmed.
Yeah.
And if there was a messy programmer in there somewhere that didn't sort of properly note their code and didn't make it easy to change things, you could basically be having to pay for people to go into code manually sift through all the lines of code, be like, okay, this needs to change, that needs to change, this needs, and while this is a perfect option, it just is
expensive,
not feasible. It's expensive
timely.
Yeah, expensive and time consuming, and when you're on the clock with only a few years to get it done.
You do have a deadline.
Yeah, you got a hard deadline. Like, there's no like, deadline. Oh, can we maybe push this to the following Monday? No, it's it. Like, sorry, the world ends if you don't
there
get this
quite
right.
Quite a strict deadline to meet.
Yeah, there's a hard, push back the new year. So that's why that option, it's not great. Ideally you could just change every single thing, but it's not possible. It's not really possible to do that. And there are also other issues, like Luke said, with data, like the sort of the data format's not being slow or unreadable or incompatible with it. It'd be really difficult to actually go in to change that. Mm. So even if you could get past all of those hurdles, actually being able to get into all the data and change it, you've still got the issue of it takes so long. Mm. So I think this was done in some cases, but it obviously wasn't the best option because of how time consuming and costly it would be. There's also windowing, which is something that I'll explain it briefly to you. So essentially what it does, a lot of systems store information about like a sort of brief sort of period, like sort of current information. So they'll do this thing where so the example here I've got is, so at say for a college that was founded in 1955, you can assume that any stored graduation date, if it ranges from 0 to 55, would be from the next century. So it'd be from 2000 to 2055.
Yeah,
because it was founded in 1955. So there wouldn't be any ambiguity until you get to 2100, then up to 2155.
Yeah.
But then the thing is, and actually there would be ambiguity before that even, because from graduation dates from 55 up, when you get to 2000 sort of 54, any year after that, there's ambiguity because you don't know whether it's 2055 or 1955 for the graduation date. So what they can do is this thing called windowing, where essentially you can, I think the way it works is you can sort of adding in extra lines of code to be like, okay, yeah, but if it's a graduation date, it buys you some extra time. It's like graduation date, if it's before 1955, it actually means 2000.
Right.
Or if it's the birthday of a student, they can be like, oh, if it's 88, it's likely to be 1988, not 1888, you know? So different windows for sort of different situations. So you can still use the two-digit dates, but you could actually buy yourself some time. Not a brilliant option, because this will only buy you limited time.
Yeah.
But it was a sort of solution to get things done before the millennium. They also had something where they would reuse space. So they reuse the space. They reuse the space for two-digit dates in a more efficient way. So essentially, because the same space was used, like the data didn't move, and the programs that don't access the date fields didn't need to be rewritten. And the way they were able to do this was because actually a lot of the old databases were stored sort of inefficiently. Mm. So they were able to make some more space there. I mean, I'm not entirely sure how this one sort of worked, but they just know that one of the things they were able to do was reuse space more effectively. And there was also something which was interesting called date repartitioning. So if you couldn't change the size of like a sort of old database, you could use the 6-digit year, day, month sort of date codes. So the first two digits being date, day, or like first two digits being year, second two digits being month, third two digits being day. Yeah. You could actually change that so that it was 3-digit years. So 1999 would be 099 and 2001 would be 101. And the days of the sort of days of the year, because there's only 365 days of the year, you don't need to put in the months. You can just represent those as what number of day of the year is. Yeah, it's really clever. I really like this one. And then that way you only need to change the input and output instructions for the date fields. And most of the other sort of operations for the date didn't need to be changed. And that means that the next time you need to change this, the next time there's going to be an issue with this is 2899, sorry.
Right, okay.
But so as you can see, with pretty much everything, all you're doing is delaying the inevitable. This is likely a problem that is going to be happening on like smaller scale, obviously, consistently. In fact, it does happen consistently. It happens every now and then. It'll be like, oh, this thing that we used to fix the Y2K bug, yeah, we got to fix it again now. the programmers before just pushed it off for like 20 years. Which makes sense, because like obviously in the lifespan of a human, you're like, well, it's 58, you know, and in 50 years, like sort of 50 years, I'm not going to be working anymore.
Yeah, I'm not going to be around. I'm not going to have to fix it then.
Something else will have come along to fix this in the future.
Yeah.
But when people keep on doing that, we're just pushing it back and back and back. So when we get to sort of things like, you know, pushing it back to 2899, it's probably a little bit better. Things like that where we're really delaying it to being a long time in the future before we need to sort anything out. Yeah, so what issues did actually happen during Y2K? Because we had all of these ways to solve it, but obviously we weren't perfect. Some places didn't do it quite as well. Some things were unforeseen. So the first signs of a sort of millennium bug problem was before the year 2000, actually. It was in 1988. So there was like sort of canned meat. A supermarket wouldn't take it because it was 80 years past its use-by date. but actually, it wasn't 80 years past its use-by date. No,
it's probably fresh.
Its use-by date was 2008.
So, oh my goodness.
Yeah, but so its use by date was 2008, but the computers read 2008 as 1908, which is 80 years. Yeah.
That's some long life tinned meat.
Yeah, so you can see that, you can understand the issues that were going to be caused by this. If every single date a computer understands is in the 90s, then it's going to eat. When you hit 2000, you're actually going back to 1900.
Yeah.
So actually in 1992, a woman from Winona, Minnesota, named Mary Bandar, she was sent a lovely invitation to join kindergarten, which is great, you know, for a child, a child like of age 4. But given that she was 104 years old, likely inappropriate. Yeah, because bear in mind that the computer system was thinking, because, you know, her birth date was in, what was it? It would have been like over 100 years prior.
Yeah.
The computer was reading that as being, oh, she's age 4. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
Did she go?
No, she didn't. She declined.
She should have gone.
Your first
to
day
troll
of school.
Because well, she could. They could
second
have been like,
first day of
my,
school.
Yeah.
Look up my age. And it would have been like, oh, you're 4 years
oh,
old.
Oh, you're 4 years yeah. old. Wow. You're looking really bad for a 4 year old.
But that did happen. That, honestly, that, things like that were happening where
that's
people's
actually
birthdays
the
were
inciting
being...
incident of Benjamin Button.
It was all just a computer mistake. So, 10% of Visa credit card machines couldn't handle cards that expired after 1999.
Oh, God.
Because they would have expired. Bear in mind,
99 years
decades
ago.
Decades ago.
Yeah, they expired. It's like, man, this card expired before Visa cards were a thing. How did you get this? So Visa asked banks to stop issuing cards with the year 2000 expiry dates, and it would fine banks up to £10,000 per month until their systems were corrected. And then at New Year's Eve in Scotland, air traffic controllers were calling the emergency room in London because they were like, oh no, like, guys, our radar has failed. We can't see any aircraft in the sky. What's going on? What's going on? And then London came back and they were saying, well, actually, your radar is working perfectly. We've just cancelled all of the flights because of the Millennium bug. So, yeah, the flights on the year 2000 were cancelled. Not all of the flights in the world, obviously, I'm not saying that. But in this case, these Scottish air traffic controllers, they didn't have any flights going up because people didn't have any flights. Which makes sense, again, because if there's an unforeseen consequence, you don't want to have it in the air. And a lot of that came from anxiety as well, because people were like, planes are going to fall out of the sky, nuclear reactors going to melt down. Speaking of nuclear reactors melting down, in Ishikawa, Japan, a nuclear facility had some of its nuclear equipment fail. But there was backups to make sure that there wasn't any massive threat. Although internationally, 15 nuclear reactors did shut down because of these little problems. But yeah, with these nuclear facilities, I don't think there was any sort of real harm to the public or anything like that. But some of them did shut down briefly. There were some minor technical issues. And obviously, people were quite comically sent ridiculously large bills for certain things. Oh. In sort of I think areas of China and Hawaii, there were power cuts because oil, sort of power stations couldn't weren't putting out electricity properly. Just little things like that. You know, obviously a lot of work had been done to stop this, but there were still a few little things. Mm. Some people were sent bills that were too high, in New York. A video rental store, back when those existed. God, I miss them. Someone received a bill for $91,250, which is fair, because if you keep your copy of The General's Daughter for 100 years, I feel like you should be fined, you know.
Took it out before it was even made.
Yeah. It's just hilarious to me that, like, I love that these the systems, they can't tell the difference between sort of 2000 and 1900.
Yeah,
you know, it's fantastic. It's incredible. Why don't we talk a little bit about the future? Because Luke, you brought up something earlier, which that was the Millennium Bug, by the way. That's the whole sort of story. That's from start to sort of finish, what the sort of issues were, how we were supposed to solve them, and really why we were worried and why, you know, we're not worried anymore.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk a little bit about the future. Luke, you brought up Unix time, sort of 32-bit Unix time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Unix
time. He's coming.
So Unix time counts the number of seconds from the 1st of January 1970. Not exactly because of leap seconds, but I don't want to talk about leap seconds. So pretend that they don't exist. which, funnily enough, is one of the options for dealing with leap seconds.
You can just ignore.
No, you can't.
You can't.
No,
you can't.
You can't.
Because of encryption.
Yeah. And also, if something needs to be specific to the second as well, you can't. No. We have to add them in, but there's different ways that we need to add them in. It's very complicated. There are reasons that you can't ignore them. There are many reasons that you can't ignore them. So, and a leap second, by the way, is sometimes every now and then, scientists will decide that that we need to add a leap second because of our orbit. It's just
1 second.
We're off by a second. Yeah, because we've got a leap year every 4 years, but not actually every 4 years. Every 4 years, unless it's a multiple of 100. But there is a leap year if it's a multiple of 400. Right, there was also great. Issues with that, by the way, because people didn't realize that the year 2000 would be a leap year.
Yeah,
because it was, they were like, oh yeah, the year one, if it's a sort of thingy of 100, it won't be a leap year, but it's actually sort of divisible by 400, so it was a leap year. Look, programmers don't, they need just calendars, right, to make their lives easier. But right.
If anyone watching this has never seen the Tom Scott video about programming time zones, oh, you need to go watch that. It's like it's the most passionate thing I've ever seen in my life.
It's linked in the description because I was watching I was watching a bunch of those in preparation for this.
It's called The Problem with Time and Time Zones, and it's Tom Scott on the channel Computer File, and it is incredible. It's so good.
Fantastic. So, with Unix time, each date and time is represented by an integer, just a whole number, sort of 1, 2, 3, all the way up, counting up from the 1st of January 1970, because this is how we do, because obviously we've got issues with, like, how do we represent date? Mm-hmm. The easiest way to do it is just with a number that is how many seconds has it been since this time that we all agreed. So there is an issue with this, and I think we might have spoken about it already, but maybe you guys right. can figure it out. So there's an issue with counting these numbers up from 32-bit and, counting these numbers up from the 1st of January 1970, and also with storing that number in sort of 32-bit systems. Jamp, what do you think the issue might be?
Something to do with information before 1970?
Well, it's not necessarily information before 1970. It's actually because if you store those dates in 32-bit, which isn't super uncommon,
right.
You can only store up to 2038.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So
now we are coming up on that quite quickly.
Yeah, we are. So that's when you start to run out of space and then you overflow and wrap back round. So there might be another sort of Y2K type scenario with us, as in with us having to fix this and move to 64-bit, wherein Luke, as Luke so sort of wonderfully told us, would go beyond the life of the planet.
Yeah, it's like, it doesn't feel like as much of an issue because most of the, like, really big computer systems we use, the important computer systems we use, will be in 64-bit. They already are mostly, but there are some things that won't be.
Yeah.
Even in 2038, because you just might not be running 64-bit computing on something like your fridge. We'll see.
And so if you were to, you know, have a 32-bit sort of fridge, as we say, as soon as it hit sort of that specific date in 2038, it would actually be the 1st of January 1970.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about that's what I like about a lot of things when it comes to programming and coding and computing, that it is very basis. It seems to be very sort of simple concepts that stack up on each other in the same way that with biology, it's just simple sort of chemical reactions, or even lower than that, simple sort of atomic interactions, and even lower than that sort of simple subatomic particles, like whatever they do together. But you add these layers of complexity up and up and up until you've got all these sort of different problems and different ways of solving them.
Yeah,
I just think it's wonderfully beautiful. But yeah, we might have to prepare for another Y2K in 2038.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not a huge problem. Like, as Luke said, a lot of things run on 64-bit, but there will always be something that hasn't been updated or that someone isn't really aware of that we need to check out, that we need to sort out. But
there are places still running Windows XP as their server.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I honestly, it baffles me when people still have things that they're still using things that are so incredibly obsolete.
Yeah.
It's like when you see someone with one of the first Apple iPhones, I'm like, how is that thing still existing? You know, like, how is it?
Some people still have iPhone 4s and I don't get it.
Yeah, it's like that's a long time ago, you know.
Pretty much a decade ago now, isn't it?
Yeah, like as in not even like, oh, how can you have such an old phone? More in a case of like,
how is it still going?
I'm surprised it's still running.
Yeah,
that's it, you know. But yeah, that is Y2K. Our first episode of the year. How are you guys feeling about it?
Well, I was actually coming to this year quite all right. You know, I got a good feeling about this year, but now I'm just worried about 2038.
You've got some anxiety 17 years in the future.
Oh my God, yeah. I was thinking that 2038 is 30 years away.
No. No.
I think it's 2008.
It's 17 years away.
Oh no. I can't do
babies being born this year and still not going to be able to drink by the time we have to worry about
unless
that.
We lower the drinking age. That's what we got to do. That's our plan.
That's how we fix it.
Lower it by 20. Fantastic. Well, that is this week's show, the first show of the year. I just want to tell everyone that we've got a Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuys.
Do we?
Yeah, we do. And it's absolutely fantastic. Loads of bonus episodes, loads of bonus clips. You can, you know, vote for episodes, submit episode topics for votes. So many cool things. We've got a Discord, all of that. It's fantastic. Fantastic stuff. You really should go and join it. And just another thing, while you're here, we know you're watching on YouTube, but why don't you go ahead and, you know, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, because we love wee reviews, don't we?
We read one out every week. Of course we like them.
We love them. And Spotify too. If you want to go to Spotify, give us a wee follow. We always love a little follow on Spotify. We were, what was that? The top 100 comedy podcasts on Spotify last year.
Oh yeah, it was 84. I think it was 84th. Yeah,
but 84th, that was fantastic. Why don't we this year try and get up to number one?
We need to beat that. And we need to go for number three, at least, in Bosnia.
Number three in Bosnia, yeah.
We hit number four. We need to be number three.
I mean, that's a much more achievable goal. Hitting number one in the UK, than because number three in Bosnia, that's a hard one.
I
want to be number one in Bosnia and Herzegovina. I want to be number one comedy podcast in Bosnia and Herzegovina. That'd be amazing. That's be my great. Target for 2021.
Fantastic.
I'll make us a plaque if we achieve it.
Good.
Yeah. No. Like, Bosnia and Herzegovina will make us a plaque.
All right, I'll email them. I'll email them.
Well, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I'm not Corey everywhere.
I'm Champion everywhere.
I'm Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Happy New Year!
Well, Happy New Year to you!
Yeah. Woo!
Happy 27AL!